Everybody stirred up.
Barton, Barton, and Fish.
Whitman versus Bartow. Cicerillo.
May it please the court. My name is Norm Cicerillo. I represent the appellant in this matter, Bradley Whitman. This is a case about the fair trial, the bedrock principle that an accused be afforded a presumption of innocence, and what steps should be taken to protect those rights. This is not, I submit, Your Honors, a case about whether a constitutional violation occurred that affected our confidence in the outcome of that trial. This is a case about whether what party, the state or the court-appointed attorney, took the requisite steps needed to protect against the violation of those constitutional rights. Mr. Whitman brings his claim under Section 2254 D1 of the Federal Habeas Corpus Statute, arguing that the state court decisions involved unreasonable applications of clearly established federal law as determined by the Supreme Court of the United States. Those decisions include Estelle v. Williams with respect to Mr. Whitman's 14th Amendment due process claim, and Strickland v. Washington concerning Mr. Whitman's 6th Amendment.
Do I recall correctly that the Wisconsin courts concluded that he had waived his right to have wear something besides the jumpsuit?
The Wisconsin Court of Appeals, Your Honor, it wasn't exactly a waiver analysis. They had concluded.
They said he didn't ask to change suit. They called it. Everybody knew about it, but he said that was all he had to wear, and he didn't say he wanted anything else. And the lawyer said, let's go.
Under Estelle, we know that a criminal defendant cannot be compelled to wear.
You betcha.
Jail clothes at trial. So the issue is, what does compulsion mean? The court below had ruled that Mr. Whitman's statement, I have no other clothes, Your Honor, does not rise to the level of a valid objection under Estelle. Mm. And that's what we take issue with respect to Mr. Whitman's 14th Amendment claim. And that issue essentially involves, does a state court have a duty or any obligation?
How did the issue come before the court in the first instance, other than the fact the guy was standing there in his prison suit?
Excuse me, Your Honor?
Other than the fact that he was present wearing his prison garb, was anything brought to the court's attention about it, or was that the only way the court...
Mr. Whitman was convicted about a year and a half earlier of a previous crime.
Right.
So therefore, he was in state custody and control when he was brought out.
I know why he was wearing the suit. I want to know what issue was brought before the trial court that gave rise to the discussion we're having now. What did the trial court hear about this, him appearing with this different garb?
Well, the trial court had actually brought up the issue the day before with counsel,
right,
about his attire. The
right.
trial court knew, this was the same judge that had
yeah.
sat on Mr. Whitman's previous trial.
Right.
So the court knew that this was a defendant in state custody and control,
right.
knew he was indigent,
right.
knew that he suffered from several mental disabilities,
right.
and knew that his access to clothing would probably be limited at best, if he had any access at
right.
all. So the state court brought the issue up with counsel. The next day when trial begins, Mr. Whitman is brought out before the court in the orange
yeah.
jail jumpsuit.
Mm.
In which case, the court brings the issue up and asks counsel, is that how he's going to appear at trial? Court-appointed counsel then says, yeah, I think so, or I believe so, or something like
but
that.
He didn't say, let's go find another suit for him.
At which point, Mr. Whitman, of all people, speaks up and says, I have no other clothes, Your Honor.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But
at
nobody says, I want a different suit. Get me something else to wear.
I think we all wish that.
No,
Mr.
No. That's a nice, simple question.
Yeah,
nobody said, let's get me something else to wear or get him something else to wear.
At that point, no. The judge,
okay.
not his own attorney.
Nobody said.
Not the court personnel. And I think it's important to note that this is the same judge from the previous trial, the same attorney from the previous trial. I believe it's even in the same court with the same court personnel as the previous trial, only a year and a half earlier. Everyone knew Mr. Whitman's limitations and what he was facing here. So after Mr. Whitman proclaims, I have no other clothes, Your Honor, the trial just proceeds, and he's in his jail attire, is easily readily identifiable jail attire from, and he raises before the jury even comes out for trial. So none of the jury had even seen him yet. So from jury selection to opening arguments to the prosecution's case in chief to closing arguments, Mr. Whitman is seated within 6 to 10 feet of the jury at all times in the jail attire.
You know, I sort of agree that the judge here should have done more. This Pierce County judge should have done more. But on the other hand, make an argument here that it was pretty overwhelming evidence of his guilt. He actually had no defense that he offered to a couple of the charges here. And maybe sitting in this orange jumpsuit would generate some sympathy from the jury and that sort of thing. I don't think this is justified on a strategic choice basis, but that sort of ameliorates any deficiencies that the judge had here. And I do think the judge should have done.
Right.
Pursued this a little bit more.
We submit that not only did the court have an obligation to do more, but even more so, the attorney had a duty to do more under Strickland.
What, to go out and buy him a suit or what?
Anything. Something, anything.
Judge Bauer, when I was in the district court, a defendant came in with a shirt on that said snake for trial. And I said I didn't think that was a real good idea, and the guy was my size. I said, do you want to wear a suit and a tie? And he said he did. We adjourned the proceedings and for 20 minutes. The guy showed up in a suit and looked pretty good.
It was one of your suits that looked pretty good. Yeah. I'll say that. I'll confess.
And
right.
Yes, I did. Yeah. And the bottom line was, though, he was convicted. And
blamed it on your suit.
I told his lawyer that have the suit just kept down there, and I'll send somebody down to get it. The next day, I sent somebody down to get my suit, and they said, we took six guys up to the prison and down to MCC in Chicago this morning, and five of them were in orange jumpsuits, and one guy had a great suit on. I never saw that suit again. And that's a true story.
Almost every jail has suits available for prisoners to come over.
I think it's a funny story, but it's also a very good point in that we're dealing...
You're just trying to prove that all Wisconsin judges are not insensitive to the attire of the defense.
Exactly. But I think the point is that the cost here in terms of prejudice and constitutional violations is so high. And we're not talking about getting criminal defendants Armani suits here. We're talking about anything, something, even an opportunity to go out and get some sort of clothing. I think the Seventh Circuit case, I believe it was Arenello, in which the court simply gave the defendant a brief opportunity to get his own clothes, and a sister went out and got him a sweatshirt, which he put over his jumpsuit or whatever readily identifiable prison clothes he was wearing, and that cured any prejudice that could have happened. It's very easy and it's very simple. And with respect to the prejudice that Your Honor brought up, I'd like to address that for a minute. And that goes right into Mr. Whitman's Sixth Amendment ineffective claim, in which the lower state court had found that there was no prejudice and pointed to two pieces of testimony. I'd like to finish up that point before my rebuttal. Two pieces of testimony that Mr. Whitman had made during trial. I think it's important to note that Mr. Whitman had only testified. He was a second-to-last witness at his trial to testify. The damage had already been done before he even took the stand and opened his mouth. Thank you.
Before you sit down, did it come out during the trial that he was in custody?
No, sir, it didn't, that he had been in custody. He had testified that he had been convicted of a felony on the stand, but that testimony or that stipulation did not go into any detail in terms of what that felony was for, when it was for, and whether he even served a day in prison. The state court had found that because of that testimony, the jury would not be surprised to see him in the jail attire. We believe that that is an unreasonable application.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay, Ms. Mueller.
Regardless of how you analyze the issue before this court, the bottom line is the same. if you analyze this case in terms of ineffective assistance of counsel, which is the way the Wisconsin Court of Appeals analyzed it, and which the state contends is the appropriate way to analyze it, then Mr. Whitman's claim fails because he was not prejudiced, as that term is used under Strickland versus Washington, when he appeared before the jury dressed in jail attire. Alternatively, if you analyze this case in terms of a constitutional violation by being compelled to appear before the jury in jail attire, then Mr. Whitman loses because any error in requiring him to appear that way was harmless error, which this court has recognized in United States versus Martin can be the case when an accused is compelled to wear jail clothing in front of a jury. The reason there is no prejudice under Strickland, or whether it's harmless error in terms of compulsion, is because of the three charges that Mr. Whitman was on trial for, he basically did not contest two of them, the possession of drug paraphernalia charge and the possession of tetrahydrocannabinol, or THC, charge. His attorney during closing arguments said, my client admits he was in possession of drug paraphernalia, he was in possession of stems and seeds. We're not really arguing those two counts. We're saying he did not have possession of cocaine. So it really comes down to this third of the drug charges, that the appearance before the jury in orange jail clothing could possibly have had an effect. Now, Mr. Whitman did take the stand in his own defense, and his defense to the charge of possession of cocaine was kind of two-pronged. On the one hand, he suggested that the teenagers who were in his house that day, who were taking drugs and drinking alcohol, that they had somehow planted the cocaine residue and the drug paraphernalia that had cocaine residue on it among Mr. Whitman's belongings. Alternatively, he testified that between the time the police were called to the house and their arrival about 2 minutes later, three unknown men came in and that they probably planted this cocaine-related evidence. Neither of those theories really made any sense because the items that had cocaine residue on them were intermingled with other items that Mr. Whitman admitted that he owned. They weren't right out in the open. They were actually contained in one case inside of a metal tin that in turn was inside of, I believe, a dresser drawer or a plastic organizer. And other items were contained in some kind of a tote bag that Mr. Whitman admitted was his, but yet he claimed that he did not know how the items with the cocaine residue got there. And Mr. Whitman's credibility was undermined not by the fact that the jury saw him sitting there in the orange jail garb, but by the fact that he lied on the stand. He was asked how many times he'd been convicted, and he said four misdemeanors. On cross-examination, while the prosecutor was going to bring out the fact that, in fact, one of those convictions was for a felony, his attorney had to jump in there and say, we stipulate to that one of them was, in fact, a felony. And the prosecutor, during closing argument, exploited this lie, or whatever you want to characterize it as, on the stand, and said, he's the only one who's lied under oath here. And the jury was also instructed that the fact a person has prior convictions can be used in assessing that witness's credibility. And you also have the situation where the jury here was aware that there had been a prior case involving Mr. Whitman, that it had occurred only 2 years previous, and that it was, quote, some kind of a serious proceeding. This was all brought out during the cross-examination by the prosecutor. And in terms of leaving aside for a moment the prejudice prong of Strickland, I think it was also reasonable for the Price County Circuit Court to find that it was not deficient performance to let Mr. Whitman appear this way before the jury as some kind of a sympathy factor. And in this regard, I do have to point out that there is something in the record which I did fail to cite in my brief, which supports the Price County Circuit Court's conclusion, and that is on page 210 of Mr. Whitman's separate appendix. Attorney Rush, who was his trial counsel, admitted that it was within the realm of possibility that the defense thought there is some sympathy factor to be gleaned by coming in this way referring to wearing orange jail garb. But Mr. Rush was very candid, and he said, Whether that occurred, I do not know. And so I think this is not a case where Judge Fox was simply manufacturing that, but he could look at what Mr. Rush testified to at the Mockner hearing, and he could also look at the fact that at trial, the defense wanted the jury to know about Mr. Whitman's brain injury, about how he had suffered serious neurological deficits as a result of an accident, because this would explain somewhat his demeanor and the way he answered questions on the stand. So I think that, plus the fact that there would be some sympathy for him, knowing that he's already been convicted of some kind of serious crime as a result of what happened 2 years ago, I think that that would be a reasonable strategy, and that's what Judge Fox found, so that on the deficient performance prong of Strickland as well, I think that Mr. Whitman's defense to this fails.
I think, assuming, without discussing any, whether you win or lose, and I know you're not in charge of the whole program, but wouldn't you think that the people conducting trials in Wisconsin would be aware of the fact that they ought to make very explicit arrangements for somebody to have something other than a jumpsuit when they appear? They can waive that, they can wear whatever they want, but it has to be offered to them?
I think that would definitely be the better practice. But
why don't the Attorney General of Wisconsin send out some sort of a notice to the trial judges that might be appropriate and save them an awful lot of horsing around?
I think I could certainly take it up with my superiors
You'd have my thanks.
Okay, and I would like to point out, though, I don't really fault, and I don't think this court should fault Judge Fox here, because he brought it up sua sponte the day before the trial and told the attorney to talk to his client and to let Judge Fox know if he wanted to have street clothes. And when you've got an attorney saying, no, the decision has been made, this is how he's going to appear, the U.S. Supreme Court...
Well, it wasn't quite as clear as that. I thought that the judge, in this little colloquy he had, the guy said, no, that's all I have to wear. It wasn't, you know, I'd like to, I wish I had something else, but he said, that's all I have to wear.
Well, that was what the defense...
Shouldn't the judge then have said, well...
I think the judge...
We'll get you something if...
I think in light of Mr. Rush...
We'll call Judge Evans and he'll bring his suit down.
Yeah.
I think that Mr. Rush, though, when he says to the court in response to his comment, the decision has been made that he will appear in that uniform, Mr. Rush says, that's correct, Your Honor. When you start talking about a decision having been made, then I think you're treading on the line, as the U.S. Supreme Court pointed out in Estelle, where if it's a strategic decision, the trial judge really isn't supposed to ask very specifically, oh, so that's your strategy here. So I think this case is a little different because you do have Whitman saying, those are the only clothes I have, Your Honor. But at the same time, Judge Fox had a lot of contact with Whitman and said, whenever this guy wanted to make his wishes known, he was not a blushing rose, he was not a shy person. He specifically asked that he be allowed to appear in street clothes for his sentencing, and that wish was accommodated. So I don't think under these facts that Judge Fox should be faulted for not making further inquiry, but definitely Your Honor's suggestion is a good one, that judges should be alerted to this fact. If there are no further questions, the state rests. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Cirillo.
Your Honors, I'd like to pick up with something that Ms. Mohler just left off with in terms of Mr. Rush's statement in court, that's correct. Mr. Rush had made that statement after the judge restated his conversation with Rush the day before and then said, apparently a decision has been made. When Mr. Rush said, that's correct, he could have been referring to that's correct in terms of it was a correct recitation of that conversation, or that's correct, that decision had been made. All this is further ambiguity that a simple question, one additional question from the judge, could have resolved. And also, with respect back to the Sixth Amendment, Mr. Rush had testified that receiving a jury sympathy could have been within the realm of possibility. The state courts allow that within the realm of possibility to trump his explicit, unrebutted, sworn testimony that he had no strategy whatsoever to have Whitman in that outfit. And lastly, going back to prejudice, Mr. Whitman had denied several of the charges against him on the stand, and this combined with May I finish my point, Your Honor?
Go ahead. You got a minute.
And this combined with, while Rush seemed to have dropped the ball on the clothing issue, he did a fairly good job of poking holes throughout the state's case in cross-examining all the state's witnesses and presenting his own witnesses that this entire investigation had been botched by the police. They had never even gone so far as to look for fingerprints on many of the pieces of items of evidence to attribute ownership to Mr. Whitman himself.
Rush actually did a heck of a good job on the prior case, too. He was charged with first-degree murder and got him off on a homicide by negligent conduct with a 7-year maximum sentence.
That's correct, which is why it's a shame that Mr. Whitman received a 9-year sentence for these drug convictions based in large part on this orange prison jumpsuit that he was forced to wear throughout the duration of the trial. Thank you.
Thanks. Thanks to both counsel. And thanks to you, Mr. Cirillo, for accepting the appointment that served for your firm today. And we appreciate it very much. Good job.
I hope somebody over there is making money. I mean,
Okay, thanks. That completes the arguments for today. The court will be in recess until 9:30 tomorrow morning.